welcome to another edition of the Beer Opinions podcast. As always, I'm Pat Berger, owner of Kaiser Tiger, and with me is Bruce White.
Yo, yo.
Bruce from the Chicagoland Beer Tours. How are we doing, Bruce?
Doing great, man. This winter, I will take it. You know, it's beautiful out. I think it's going to be almost 60 on Saturday.
I know. It's not good curling weather.
Sorry, yep.
You know, but you're right. I'll take it. I shouldn't complain.
Yeah.
But I'm going to.
Yeah. Well, you know, got to do it.
It's my podcast. I'll complain if I want.
Oh, man.
Everything else is good. The tours are going well. I saw one last week at Patty Long's. They seem to be having a good time.
Oh, man. You know, we run our shortest walk. We kind of reduce our schedule down. People don't want to walk around Chicago winter. Go figure. But we reduce our schedule to our rebranded beer and our bacon and brewing tour in Lakeview and Lincoln Park, which, of course, Patty Long's is a highlight.
Patty Long's, I've heard of that bar.
where we do three beers with three different bacons on that, of our 14 different beer tastings on that tour. But I know you guys do a beer and bacon pairing as well there. It's so good. I mean, it just goes well together.
It is nice. It's a kind of a no-brainer. Smoked, cured pork and beer all goes together. Cool. Yeah. Well, as always, we're coming to you from Kaiser Tiger in the Skyline Lounge and in Chicago, Illinois. And there's a lot going on in Chicago in the beer world, as there always is. But we thought maybe we'd try out a new segment here since we are doing this every 2 weeks. We're committed. We're gonna pump this out every 2 weeks. So we're going to go through what has been going on in the last 2 weeks in the beer scene in general and also in Chicago.
Yeah, so we'll just get started right away. I was at the Illinois Craft Brewer Guild meeting Tuesday? Jeez, this week. Shout out to Blue Island Beer Company. Couple things for you Illinois craft beer fans. There's a new Winter Beer Festival coming up in February. The Winter Beer Fest, it's in Rosemont, and it's going to be Illinois-only beer. It seems like it's pretty cool. I believe, and don't quote me on this, that you get a free pair of gloves when you get there because it's going to be outdoors. So they're kind of embracing it. Free gloves, you know, so hold that beer tasting
glass. Fingerless gloves, or they cover the fingers too?
I don't know.
The only gloves you need are fingers.
That's right. Fingerless are the best.
Yeah.
I really don't know because I don't go to the craft brewers meetings.
Yeah.
Congratulations to you for sitting through that.
Yeah. No, actually, they're yeah. And then
there's beer, I assume.
There's beer. And then a lot of bearded dudes.
I could sneak in then. Fat bearded dudes. Yeah. I'm in.
And then Wells Park, no more at the end of Craft Beer Week. They decided it was just too much, and I kind of agree with them. Instead, they're going to do another Illinois-only beer festival, I believe, in August. So stay tuned for that. I thought that was pretty cool.
So no final event for Craft Beer Week?
Correct. They're just going to do the Beer Under Glass, which is a great event at Garfield Park Observatory, and then to kick it off, and then no official closing event, to my knowledge. So,
cool. That is news to me.
Yeah. And then going on, Goose Island on the Clybourne location in Lincoln Park closed for 5 months for renovations.
Yes, they had a big party. I did not go, but a lot of people had a very good time and big blowout. And, you know, a lot of, so many craft beer happenings have gone on in that space.
Mm-hmm.
It's very nostalgic for a lot of us who have been doing this in Chicago for a long time. The Siebel Institute even operated out of that space for a little bit. And, you know, all of the Chicago Beer Society meetups used to be there. And but, you know, it this is a restaurant business and people want what is new and shiny. And so I get it. And I bet it'll be very nice. They certainly have the money now to do whatever they want, right?
Little AB money,
sprinkle it all over there. Sure, it'll be beautiful.
Unicorns running out, serving you beer.
They finally figured out how to take ownership of that, because when that ABI deal first went down and they bought Goose Island, it was against the law for them to own that liquor license. But, you know, laws change, and now it's theirs, and I'm sure, you know.
Go figure, a big corporation winning. It's first time in political history.
I think they have some lobbyists that do their bidding.
Yeah,
another one.
I will say, like, I feel bad for the employees, obviously, that are on hiatus. Hopefully they'll find new homes or be rehired by Goose, but I do think that space did need a refresh. So
yeah, it's a bummer, but restaurants close all the time, and unlike a lot of restaurant closings, they are getting a severance, I've heard. Yeah. So you know, and there are, I can tell you from experience, there are a whole lot of restaurants out here in Chicago, and they're all hiring, so hopefully you know, they can find a job if they want to apply at Kaiser Tiger.
Yeah.
They are welcome to do so. We are always hiring. And, so, you know, I nothing surprising there, I don't think.
Yep. Next up on tour, a new brewery is now open in Westtown, close to Kaiser Tiger, so you can hit up both, right?
This is true. Yeah. I stopped by there before they were making beer.
Yeah.
Nice space. You know, it's in that manufacturing district where Goose Island Fulton is. I am tasting their beer this Monday, so they're coming by this Monday, and they hit my buddy Jay at the Map Room yesterday, and he thought it was pretty good, so I'm excited.
Good. 75-person tap room there as well, so
that's going to be key for them.
Yeah.
So obviously, a lot of breweries opening. We talked about a few breweries closing last time. There's a bit of a saturation, and if you aren't selling directly to the consumer, I think you're going to be in trouble. These guys have a nice sized tap room.
Yep.
So everyone go check them out.
Cool. Speaking of which, Alarmist. This is a little down the road, but they're going to open up a tap room at their brewery in Saganash up on the north side.
Yeah. Saganash, fancy neighborhood. I was there the other day for the mighty Pope Francis Global Academy Wolves took on whatever that fancy Catholic school is there in Saganash. And we went and beat them, by the way.
Oh,
fifth
man.
Grade boys basketball. It's exciting stuff.
Isn't that the last time? Wasn't there a full-blown on-court riot? Or am I just... No, I just made that
nothing
up.
Full-blown, no. But it gets intense. It gets intense.
Okay, yeah. All right.
Yes, so that'll be great. Gary Gully is a great guy, the brewmaster owner over there, and his beers have gotten extremely good. The Entrenched IPA was on tap here at Kaiser recently. It is tasting great. So once again, Gary realizes that in this crowded market, he's got to hit the consumer directly, cut out the middlemen,
yep.
Cut out, you know, the distributor and me, the bar, and, you know, make that money.
Yep. Phobophobia. We've had that on the tour a little bit, and I really like that beer.
It was great, right?
Yeah,
we poured that at Patty's. It's good beer.
Yeah.
He's still got that. He brought some, an employee of his brought some samples by yesterday at Patty's, and they're tasting great.
Cool. Next up, just quick shout out to Haymarket, who opened here in 2010. Actually, not too far. As you can see, Kaiser Tiger's kind of in a good spot right by these, in the west part by the west breweries. But they are opening a new brewery. It's now open in Bridgman, Michigan.
Yes, and I've only seen pictures. Pete was nice enough to send me an invite to the opening, but it was a Friday night. I had to work, and you know, who on earth is going to drive me home from that?
Yeah,
because
it's a long.
I'm
Uber
not driving home from Michigan after a
long Uber ride
after a Haymarket brewery opening.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But yes, congrats to Pete. Great guy, great brewer. I've known him coming on 20 years now, and. I really hope the very best for him, and I know the beer is going to be killer.
Yep. Then another new brewery alert, new brew pub, I might be mispronouncing this, Alulu is going to be apparently opening up in Pilsen. Apparently they've been at it since 2015, but it was one of those that came across my Facebook, and I was like, never heard of this.
Mine too. Same thing. I'd never heard of them. You know, it sounds like they showed a picture of the building. It looks like maybe it was an old bar or something.
Yeah.
So I assume they're going to have a tap room.
And it sounded like they have a kind of a. I'm just going to. Sorry if this offends people, but a fancy chef. You know, I feel like the high end brew pub is kind of becoming a little bit of a thing here in Chicago.
For sure, yeah. 18th Street just got a new chef. They're in Northwest Indiana, and they have a video online that promotes it, and the food looked very fancy.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, man. So check that. That should be apparently opening anytime. So something to keep an eye out.
Yeah, good for them. There's another brewery in Pilsen called Low Res that I honestly wasn't that familiar with until they came by here, and very nice beers. We did a little event with them last week or the week before, and they are working on a tap room in Pilsen as well. So
wow.
Pilsen is really becoming a beer mecca. Mars is going to open soon next door in Bridgeport.
Moody Tongue is
there. Moody Tongue is there, yeah. So... Lots going on the south side.
That's awesome. Yeah, and Pilsen's a cool neighborhood. So that's
very cool. Yeah. I'm a north sider myself. I don't get over there as much as I should, but it's certainly happening.
Yep. And then finally, update on the Finch saga. Have moved into the Like Mind space on the near west side, so I'm glad they found a home. And Like Minds was always kind of a Milwaukee-centric brewery, so I think they had tried to open in Milwaukee, couldn't, and then opened here in Chicago, and then have gone back to Milwaukee. So it's not really I'm glad they kind of found their way back.
Right. And, it was a weird story with them. We actually premiered them here at Kaiser Tiger because, really nice guys. And they hung out here while they were building the brewery. And then very quickly, within a month, they dismissed their distributor, Chicago Beverage, said, we're going to distribute ourselves. And in actuality, they were just sending all the beer, I think, to Milwaukee, where they had a big name, because one of the owners is a Michelin-starred chef, I believe.
Yep.
Although now he is out of the brewery.
Drama.
And yeah, but then the laws changed, and they were able to open a small brewery in Wisconsin. And I think a smart move by them. They saw that hey, we've got this big brewery in Chicago that isn't making a dent in the Chicago market because it's so crowded, and we're self-distributing down there, which is another pain. It's kind of a good idea to downsize in this particular environment, which is what they're doing, and Finch made them an offer they couldn't refuse, according to the article, which is another shocker. Finch just won't, I don't know how you take a haircut with your brew pub closing, and then you auction off your brewery, and then you buy another brewery. I don't know, who are these guys? I don't know who, God bless them, they got some money or something.
Yeah.
They're not giving up.
They're not giving up. I give them credit,
Can't keep them down.
Yeah, and so good stuff. So awesome. Well, yeah. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that. We're gonna try to debut kind of the beer scenes. New stuff is happening all the time, so we felt like we'd give you guys kind of just a quick roundup every couple weeks.
Yes, I think it went swimmingly well.
Yeah, my God.
Oh my gosh, so good. All right, so we wanted to get into. An article that caught our eye this week. It is Craft Beer Trends That Need to Stop in 2017. It was by Lee Brogelor. I'm probably destroying his last name there. And it is from Thrillist. Hard-hitting news of Thrillist.
Number six will shock you.
Is this fake news? I don't know. We don't care. This is beer opinions.
Apparently everything's fake news these days, right?
It could be. But we thought it was fun to just kind of go through these, give our opinions, because this is beer opinions, after all.
Yeah.
And that's what we do. So, beer trends that need to stop. The first one on here is... poorly made hazy IPAs. Now, I got in trouble on another podcast that I'm on, the Beer Temple Industry Roundtable. I was on with Chris Betts from Transient, and we got into it a little bit about hazy beers. And, I'm an old school guy, and I've been doing this a while, and as a beer buyer, I find a soupy beer to be... a telltale sign of something being wrong. Now, there are no absolutes in this world. Only a Sith deals in absolutes, right? That's Star Wars motto.
Yeah.
You know, and although I kind of like being a Sith. But, you know, it's a gray world, and, you know, that statement isn't always true, but it is a signifier. And when I get a beer that is, you know, looks like clam chowder, I think, A, was this racked off the bottom of the fermenter? Because that was a very common problem in the 90s. You would get these beers from breweries that, you know, fair enough, they're very small. They wanted to get every keg filled they could get filled, but they would rack off a keg of basically yeast and trub that was, you know...
Pretty gnarly,
and you would have to send it back. Or maybe the beer isn't done yet, because if you don't condition your beer properly in the, you know, in the bright, then, you know, it's not going to be bright.
Mm-hmm.
It will be cloudy. So that can, you know, sometimes be an issue. But that is not what's going on with these IPAs, right, in theory.
Yeah, and I think that, so to give a little background in you know, my motto, I'm more of the beer enthusiast, where Pat's the I would say, the beer expert of the of our tandem here, so correct me, Pat, if I go. And my motto is always, if it's on the internet, it has to be true. So, you know, definitely double-check me. But the way I understand
it... That'll get you elected to president. We're not talking about politics.
Yeah. Hard these days, but yes. the hazy IPAs, there's kind of a new category, debatable, trying to start, called the New England IPA, which is where this is kind of, as far as my understanding goes, and where this really got some traction. And basically, Heady Topper, Alchemist, is the brewery, came out, and they came out with this hazy IPA that became one of these cult IPAs that everybody tried to get.
Correct.
And so then people are like, wow, it poured hazy. And so I was doing a little research, and basically the difference between kind of your classic West Coast IPA, which is what a lot of American craft beer is known for, big hops, a lot of bitterness. Now that's kind of changing in a sense to citrus and floral and other things. But this is going to be a lot brighter and juicier than that, and less bitter than kind of in terms of the flavor profile that you traditionally have. Now, again, correct me if you're...
It tastes like orange juice.
And basically, they use one of the things, the other thing, they use English ale yeast instead of American ale yeast, which is going to not clump. So it's going to suspend in the beer and binds with more stuff. So when you pour it, going to be cloudy.
Yeah. I will stop you there. That's not necessarily true.
Okay.
I mean, as far as I'm using English ale yeast, that, you know, that could be. But there's English, traditionally English ale yeast flocculated very nicely.
Mm-hmm. And
because the English breweries were doing stuff like cask ale and stuff where they, you know, wanted it to drop bright. And so the classic English ale yeast that they say comes from Fuller's, we used to use it at Flatlanders, it drops like butter in the bottom of the thing and it gives you a nice clear beer. What is happening with these beers, and it's, you know, it's also debatable, but the protein and yeast particles are sort of bonding with the hop particles that are left in there, and they think maybe it is when they are dry hopping, because, you know, obviously there's a lot of forums going around, you know, because it's a very hot category of beer right now.
Yeah.
And they're being made in Chicago, and they taste good, and we've had them on tap here, but brewers are, for the first time, trying to figure out how to make their beer cloudy instead of how to make it clear.
Right.
So one of those ways they're saying is dry hopping during primary fermentation, which is not normally what you would do, and that will get the, you know, while the yeast is suspended in the beer, it'll cling to those hop particles, and you'll get this nice hazy beer. Well, nice to some people. Back in the day, East Coast IPA meant really more of an English style IPA. So this is kind of a new, you know, it is a Heady Topper clone is what everyone's kind of going for. That beer has mythic cult status, and people wait in lines and lines, you know, at the brewery in their cars and all of this to get the beer. I've had it once. I thought it was pretty damn good.
Yeah.
But I don't think it was ever their intention to make a cloudy beer. It's just the way it ended up. And, you know, I don't think they were proud of it. But, you know, the drinker sort of, you know, just like food, we eat and drink with our eyes. Mm-hmm. And when you see something, then your brain's telling you, well, this is going to taste like Hetty Topper. It looks like Hetty Topper. So brewers are going out of their way to make sure it looks like Hetty Topper. And some in scrupulous ways, if you believe everything on the internet, which Bruce does, some brewers are even adding flour.
I was going to say that is definitely something that I've been hearing.
And yes,
that's not good. I think almost anybody can agree that
it's a little disingenuous. Yeah. I mean, is it going to hurt is it going to hurt the flavor? I don't know. I've never added flour to a beer, but I mean, it's disingenuous.
Right. And I think that a lot of the Cicerone folks, I think their heads kind of explode with this style.
They do. I'm a BJCP judge, and my head kind of, you know, turns around with it.
And the other reason, which you brought up, is it's really hard to judge these beers because you don't know if something went wrong or not. And sight is one of the ways that beers, this style of beer was traditionally judged. And if you can't figure it out, then that's not good.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, that makes it harder.
My argument, too, is that, you know, that it possibly shortens the shelf life of the beer.
Sure.
Because, you know, you traditionally don't want all of this used up decaying yeast in your beer. Some would argue that the shelf life of these IPAs is already pretty short. That's probably true, but, you know, I don't know why we want to shorten it even more.
I mean, so all this being said, I kind of have, I've formed my opinion based on one brewery here in Chicago's beer, which is Juice Pants from Maplewood.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you've had that one. Yeah.
That is the only one we've poured here at Kaiser.
And, like, it was groundbreaking for me. I was like, I just love this beer so much.
It's really good.
And so I kind of, that beer has shaped my opinion, and shout out to Maplewood because it was fantastic. And, you know, I was kind of thinking the kind of counter arguments to this. There are other beer styles that are hazy, that are like traditionally hazy. You know, you go to your Hefeweizens and some of your other styles. So, you know, to counterpoint, you can say, well, you know, unfiltered Zwickel. I don't know if, and I'm curious on your opinion on this, if, because it's debated how much unfiltering, leaving the yeast in, really changes the flavor of the beer.
Oh, it does.
And for me, I think it does.
Yeah.
I think it adds kind of an earthiness and a freshness to it that you don't normally have when it's unfiltered.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're stripping away flavor when you filter beer.
Yeah.
For good or for bad.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you don't want that flavor.
Right. Right.
But yeah, you're changing the flavor of the beer. You know, Hefeweizens, I don't think are a good comparison because they're hazy for a different reason. It's more of a protein yeast haze with, you know, also a lot of, you know, I think Hefeweizen is best out of a bottle conditioned, you know, it's not really a traditional draft product. I mean, they've always sold it on draft, but you'll see it, you know, I think it's better in bottles, and you swirl it around on the bottom to get that yeast out and pour it in and all that. But if you just poured it, you know, straight out of that bottle, it's not going to be cloudy like some of these IPAs are.
Sure.
You know, these these Northeast style IPAs are not clearing up, you know, just sitting in a keg. They're cloudy all the way through from the time you tap them all the way to the end.
Some dark magic.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. But, you know, and Zwickel is another one that is, you know, we know it has a very short shelf life.
Sure,
incredibly short. It is supposed to be unfinished beer, sort of out of the bright tank. Zwickel literally means the little spout that comes off of a fermenter or a bright tank that you sample beer off of. And traditionally, you only get that Zwickel beer when you're visiting the brewery and you're taking the tour and they pour it for you right off the tank. That's what Zwickel beer really is. And then, of course, you know, Stiegl, I think Stiegl Paracelsus is sort of the what has, you know, stuck in all of our minds and had some breweries try to recreate that in the U.S. But, you know, that beer is good. You know, that comes in and I pour it for about, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, and then it goes off. It's not good anymore.
Right.
And some, you know, there's a brewery in St. Louis, Urban Chestnut. I like them a lot. They do some really great stuff. They are marketing a Zwickel that they actually centrifuge, which is, you know, post... basically, Zwickel beer is supposed to be untouched. It's not processed in any way that, you know, all the processing that you would do to package a beer, you don't do that with Zwickel. They are still a really nice beer. It's not as nice as it was when I would visit St. Louis and have it at the brew pub,
fresh,
you know, five, six
yeah,
years ago.
Right.
And it's not as cloudy either, but their brewmaster knew that he couldn't send out a beer in cans across the country and have that high of a yeast count and have it shelf stable. So
yeah,
he didn't. He centrifuged it. So the only argument with that beer really is it a Zwickel? At this point, it's, you know, it's the name of the beer, and that's that. But yeah, you know, it's a silly topic, I think, in the end. If it tastes good, drink it, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, as a beer buyer, I have to know, you know, how do I serve this beer the best? What am I doing to make sure that this is optimum freshness, optimum flavor? And I need to know if your IPA is incredibly cloudy, that I got to pour through that extra quick, you know. I don't know. It's
you'll probably see, I'm guessing, more of it, because I think this
for sure they're flying off the shelves.
Yeah.
Flying
yeah.
off the shelves.
Oh.
Udine is making one that I've heard is very good. I haven't tried it yet.
Okay. Oh, nice.
That Maplewood one is really good.
Yeah.
And then Transient, Chris Betts, the guy I was arguing this with on the other podcast, he makes one that's supposed to be very good.
Okay.
So, you know, it's not going away, and let's just all educate ourselves on it and enjoy them when we can. And, you know, I got no problem with it, really.
Sounds good.
Get myself in trouble.
One last thing I just thought was funny was apparently Vermont was where, you know, where it started and where the ground zero in a sense, and they really wanted to call it a Vermont IPA instead of a New England IPA, and they're having like a battle. I just thought it was
I think
funny.
They should.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, New England IPA used to mean, or East Coast IPA used to mean like Harpoon IPA, which was really
sure.
much more in the English tradition. It used English hops. It wasn't as hoppy as West Coast
Boston.
IPA.
Yeah. Chowder.
Yeah. And it had more malt character. That was
that's
great,
a terrible,
great Kennedy
I can't do it.
Impersonation. Man of a thousand voices. But, you know, it's definitely a new style, and it's here to stay. So,
cool.
All right, let's get on to the next one. Using crushable as an adjective to describe beer. And it says here, we need to get rid of crushable as a catch-all term. Describe a tasty beer. It's a wide array of linguistic possibilities waiting to be unleashed in its place. Crushable is not far off from smooth. It's soulless cousin in wordplay. This is from Brian Roth, and he's a writer in This Is Why I'm Drunk, a very popular beer blog. So he wants to get rid of the word crushable. There's always a word, you know, that people want to get rid of
yeah.
the following year. I will admit to having used the word crushable. You know, but I'm going to agree with him. It does need to go.
I mean, I just don't hear it very much. I was trying to think about this. Is this more of like a West Coast thing? Like, yo, dude, this is so crushable. You know, that type of thing.
I've heard it a lot here in Chicago.
Is it? Okay.
You know, it's sort of with the whole session IPA thing that was happening years ago. It came in with that, dude, so crushable.
I just don't think even sessionable IPAs are crushable. Crushable to me is like slamming Natty Light like I used to in college. You know what I mean? I'm not proud of it.
Dude, that's crushable. I think, you know, I think it sounds stupid. And
yeah,
I will make a concerted effort, Brian Roth, to not use that word again.
Except for the Crushinator from we've had it on the tours a little bit from, why can't I think of, it's another Maplewood, their Session IPA. It's pretty good. But I gotta, it's in the name.
It's called Crushinator?
Yeah.
Well,
he's not gonna like that beer.
No, that doesn't. Poor Brian, he's not gonna like that.
Yeah.
But you know, it's crushable. All right, what's the next one? The obsession with new weird brews. It says, I was recently at a new brewery with great beer on a solid varied list. A Hell's, a Pils, a few IPAs, very, and a rye IPA. A friend stared up at the chalkboard and with seeming disappointment, wow, they don't change up the list here much, do they? The brewery in question does, in fact, have small batch runs, but on this weekday before Christmas, they were down to their more than basic regular beers. I was dismayed. Why is the only latest and greatest of interest anymore? New and weird is fun for sure, but we have to remember to appreciate good beer where it is. And this is from Sarah Bozich, and she is a writer on sarahbozich.com.
Bozich. Aptly named.
I'm ruining everyone's name today.
Yeah.
Yeah, aptly named. So she's basically, you know, and I think this has been going on for more than just 2016, but it's kind of a blowback on all these, you know, weird beers. And I think we're well into sort of the pendulum swinging back the other way. We're seeing lagers are making a big comeback, and even pale ales I'm seeing make a bit of a comeback, stouts. So I agree. I'm not a weird beer fan. When someone comes in to me with a beer and says, oh, you know, we made it with chamomile and, you know, and grains of paradise and some, you know, lemon peel and... you know, you'll see my eyes just start rolling, you know?
So I thought of you last night because I was actually down in Pilsen at Dusex. They're having a beer, Brew You, a little shout out to them. It's pretty cool. 4 weeks, four different breweries. Last night was it's got to be your favorite brewery, Forbidden Root.
You know, they're friends of mine. Yeah, I like them a lot.
They're
good, you know,
yeah, right? I didn't mean.
But they're certainly on the forefront of weird brews.
Yeah. So they
did.
Were,
did you have this Fernet Branca?
Yeah.
Beer?
They debuted it. So I ran up to. So they just so you guys know, Forbidden Root. I respect them because at least they're honest about it. They're like, hey, we're going to do some crazy shit. We're going to kind of not do the traditional stuff, and we're going to use a whole bunch of herbs and other crap. I actually like some of their beers a lot. I respect that. I think they're honest. I think they're trying to do something different, and I don't have a problem with that. It's more of the... If I have a problem with it, it's a brewer's... breweries that are trying to just catch the flame, you know, and try to do something that they're not really fully invested in.
It is. I mean, you know, talking as a man who spearheaded the effort to barrel age a beer in a Malort barrel, but, you know, I want to preface this with the fact that we did it as a joke.
Right. You were
you
not
know?
Taking that
we
seriously.
We were being ironic. But, yes, they... You know, it's the crux of their brewery, and I'm, you know, I don't want to bash them. I've had some good beers from them.
Yeah.
I've had some bad ones. By the way, beautiful brew pub. If you're near there, wonderful food, really nice brew pub. I like the place a lot. But sometimes, you know, like I had a beer there with chartreuse in it. You know, and it wasn't done ironically.
Mm-hmm.
They were serious. And it was on nitro as well, which, you know, just it seemed like a whole lot of stuff into that sort of just didn't meld and was kind of a mess. But, you know, they're pushing the envelope, and
yeah.
I don't want to, you know, shit on people for pushing the envelope, because that's what you know, this craft beer world is all about that.
Well, and I remember talking to somebody who was involved in the fashion industry at one point, and they're like, if you know me, you know I'm not. So, but you know, you ever see?
I can attest to that.
You turn those the fashion week on, and all those people are wearing weird stuff. I think last year they even had their junk exposed, and they're like, you know, they got the crazy space age stuff, and I always was rail and be like, what the heck is this? This is a waste of everybody's time. And the person involved in the fashion industry is like, listen, man, they're pushing the envelope. You might not notice it, but little parts of that will find their way into...
Right. You're like, no one is ever going to wear that to work.
Yeah, right.
But it's the idea of it gets infused into fashion.
Yeah.
But with beer, we do have to drink this stuff. Someone does.
Oh, by the way, they did... And I did want to mention, too, they did make a beer... That and I believe Fournette reached out to them.
They did. This was in conjunction with Fournette. Yeah.
So it's really cool. The bottle looks great. It's a bomber. And it smells, I would say, even more like Fournette than it tastes. But if you like Fournette, you're going to like this beer. That's for sure.
I kind of like Fournette.
Yeah, me too. And then I ran up to the brewmaster. I'm like, you guys got to do this with Milwaukee.
BJ?
And so, yeah. So I was like, oh, man. And then, you know.
Well, you know, we did our Malort barrel-aged beer in conjunction with Malort, but they knew it was a joke, too.
Malort's
I think Fournette was or dead serious.
Malort, when you want to fight your dad.
Yeah. So how's the beer? How's the Fournette beer?
It was good. If you like Fournette. I happen to like Fournette.
Well.
And the smell, I mean, they really captured it, particularly, in my opinion, with the, when you smell it. It smelled like, and they gave a small pour, so it smelled and looked like Fournette. The taste, it kind of, I would say, mellows into much more of a stout type of flavor to it, which, again, was quite good. It's a beer that you couldn't drink a lot of, I don't think, but every now and then it would be a fun beer to have.
Well, my interest has peaked. Okay. I might have to roll over there and give it a go.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yes, so we kind of agree with Sarah.
Yeah, yeah.
Weird beers need to go. But, and, you know, one more thing on that before we go. You know, I just wish breweries would master, you know, these classic styles before they get weird. You know, I think a lot of them are coming out right out of the gate with some weird stuff that doesn't work out. You know, get the basics down. They're there for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can branch off and make your sassafras, whatever, you know, weirdo shit you want. All right. The next one is tap lists that haven't been updated. This comes from Ben Browson, writer at Craft Beer Time. And it's basically bitching about people's draft lists not being up to date.
Agreed.
I will say from experience that the tap list is the bane of my existence.
Scott, I mean, it's hard, I'm sure.
It is so hard. And it's Murphy's Law that the second you print new ones and stuff them all in the menu holders, that's when you blow a beer.
Yep.
And that was every time.
I was going to say, like, this is why the chalkboards are great and things that you don't have to run menus. But when you have a big bar like Kaiser, you can't rely on a chalkboard. You got to have menus.
No, everyone prefers the menu, and you know, it's the reading material while you're drinking your beer, and all the rest. They are incredibly important. Just know that when you do get a fully updated tap list at a bar that changes their beers regularly, applaud them because it's not easy.
And I tell you what, because I check, I do applaud you guys because I'm able to just go on Patty Long's the website, which I believe is connected to Beer Menus, a great resource.
BeerMenus.com, great resource. There's Tap Hunter as well. There's, you know, all, if you own a bar and you're listening to this, you know, get on those. And they now have the ability to, you can print your menu directly from their website.
Wow.
Yeah, that's
cool.
a bit of a game changer. We do it at Patty's, and, you know, instead of updating that and then updating a separate list, we just do it once, hit print. Good to go. So
perfect.
It is definitely easier now than it ever has been to have an updated draft list.
BeerMenus.com. And for people who are just consumers, great resource if you're ever hunting for particular beers. I always would say call ahead because, again, sometimes...
Assuming the publican is updating that BeerMenus.com. And you know, it's trial and error figuring out which ones are and which ones aren't.
Right.
You know, when you see you know, Bourbon County Stout on tap and it's, you know, 8 months after it was released, chances are they haven't updated. But maybe they have. Give them a call.
Yeah. Sometimes they lurk, right, in the back
Sometimes.
Of the beer. Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
All right. What is the next one here? Multiple beers. It says, I wish our love affair with multiples would come to an end. First, we were presented with double Bock beers, then triple Belgian beers. Were all the rage. Not to be outdone, some breweries created quadruple beers, and I've even seen quintuple or two. Why doesn't someone just brew a double centruple Belgian ale and be done with it? Because if they did, you just know another brewery would still try to top it. It's getting out of hand. This is from Brian Carey, writer of Great Beer Now. Well, first, Brian, I would like to tell you that triple Belgian beers are, they've been around a long time. This is not a new fad. What would be new, you know, the Belgians, they used to, you know, they would have, and the English did this, and the Scottish did this, and this was very common. A brewery would make somewhat of the same beer in different strengths. And they, in Belgium, they would mark it with the barrels with an X, or two X's, or three X's, and then sometimes four X's. And that was your single, double, triple, quadruple. So there is some, you know, historical basis for doing that. Now, in the U.S., we take these terms and then we use them for other styles. So you end up with a triple IPA and a double IPA and all of this stuff. But you know, it's kind of a useful thing to let the consumer know that this is going to be incredibly strong and, you know, double the hops or whatever.
Yeah, deepa, deepa.
Yeah,
I love. Yeah. I love. I do. I do like a lot of times I know what not to order because for whatever reason I just don't want a beer of that strength or,
right.
or but sometimes I do. So it, you're right. It is a good signaling device to consumers.
The you know, the, I think the we used to call it the beer arms race because everyone was mm-hmm. racing to have a bigger, stronger beer. And that ended a few years ago. Mm-hmm. So I don't see that trend continuing. You know, I think it ended before 2016.
I think, yeah, you're right. Just the bitter for bitter's sake beers.
That certainly went on. Bitter for bitter's sake, strong for strong's sake.
The IBU count.
Yep, yep. And then, I mean, there was literally breweries vying for the strongest beer in the world. All of these beers, by the way, were undrinkable. You know,
yeah.
I tasted a few. They weren't palatable. But they were great marketing tools. And I don't blame these breweries for doing it. They were getting huge press, worldwide press. You know, BrewDog was... We talked about that beer before. It is, you know, it's a marketing tool, and God bless them for doing it, but God bless them for stopping to do it because those beers weren't anything more than a story for the AP. All right. Here's one. This next one. This next one is near and dear to your heart.
This is when I get to go on the attack.
Yes. All right. Pedal bars. If you haven't heard of these, Google it. They're, quite frankly, I think they look pretty cool. And they started in Amsterdam.
They're not cool, Pat.
They started in Amsterdam that I first started hearing about them. And everybody sits at a bar around a giant bicycle that's a bar. And they pedal, you know, presumably someone who isn't drinking is steering, and you go from bar to bar. It's like basically a trolley, a man-made, or man-powered trolley. And but they have apparently gone the way of the trolley in Chicago of just delivering a gaggle of assholes to your bar.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Like, okay, first of all, this is one of those things that, like, when you really, when you first see it, you're like, that's awesome. And then when you actually, like, think about it, you're like, that's dumb. You know, or I'll do it once. I'm sorry. I'm throwing the whole industry under the bus. I'm coming after it. The pedal bars. I'm biased. I have walking tours, you know. But I remember getting people, when these things came popular when I started, I got an article a week being like, oh, you should do this in Chicago. And I'm thinking to myself, could you imagine, like, how many people are going to die riding these things around the streets of Chicago? I'm like... I have a hard time just getting in a car I think
it's the same issue that the trolleys in Chicago have where you can drink on them.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, the you couldn't on these. In fact, sometimes red tape works in your favor. Thank you, City of Chicago, for realizing these were a public nuisance and a danger, and they banned them, so they cannot have pedal pubs in the City of Chicago. And so I was pretty happy about that. but I think a lot of times you can't drink on them. It's state by state or locality by locality.
Gotcha.
So you kind of go and then you'll bike around and then you go to the bars and then you drink in the bars. So it kind of defeats the purpose there too. But, the other thing I was thinking about is when you're on a beer tour, including my tours or wherever, like, a lot of times it's bachelorette parties, other things. You want to have a good time. You're there to have fun. You're there to let loose. Like, you learn about a lot of stuff, but I get it. But, you know, we're in these cities and places where we're still interacting with the community. And so these kind of tend to reinforce this drunken debauchery that ticks a lot of people off. And, you know, so I can totally see, I think the trend is over. I'm ready for them. Now, I will say that the one time, the places where it makes sense are some Midwestern cities where their downtowns are kind of empty on the weekends. It's not Chicago, but it is some other ones. That doesn't bother me as much because then you're really not interfering with people's livelihood. In fact, you're bringing business to downtown businesses that didn't have it on Saturdays. I don't have a problem with that. But man, when it's a crowded and you're bringing all these people in, you know, good luck.
I still think they look cool.
There's one in Detroit that is going to be one that not only can you ride, you then go on a, and it goes into the water like a boat, you bike around.
Safe.
I'm like, oh God, I just imagine the insurance on these things, right?
I have to say, you know, they must be a nuisance because I think even Amsterdam,
they banned them.
And, yeah. And there are no more tolerant people on this planet than the Dutch.
Could you imagine going to see like the Anne Frank Museum and then getting hit in the face with the inflatable penis? I mean, that would just be like, I mean, that's, you know, I don't blame. Bravo to Amsterdam. Bravo. Maintain your cultural heritage.
All right. We got two more. We're going to do them quickly. The next one is wax dipped beer bottles. This person has a serious problem with wax dipped beer bottles. Her name is Ashley Rouston. Drink with the wench. I believe she's the beer wench, she's known as. And she doesn't like, it says, you know, wax dip bottles are a fucking bitch to open. Maybe I'm lazy. Maybe I don't have the proper wax dip bottle opening devices. Or maybe I've cut myself way too many times trying to open one of these suckers. And maybe, just maybe, I'm tired of having to drink the wax because I never seem to open them correctly. But either way, wax dip bottles, I'm over it. Well, Ashley, I think maybe the problem is with you. You don't know how to open a wax dip bottle. They do serve a purpose, and she mentions that they keep oxygen from getting in, and they're traditionally for beers that are maybe meant to be aged. But honestly, if you if you can't open a wax dip bottle, the problem is with you.
I mean, I just don't have enough money to invest in a lot of wax tip bottle beers. So I can't say I have ever thought like, wow, this is like really happening a lot to me, but that's probably just my budget concerns.
Right. These are very special occasion beers. So yeah. I mean, I'm not popping them open every day.
Yeah.
It's not a big,
I think they kind of look kind of like you said with the pedal pubs. They kind of look cool.
They do look cool. They definitely look cool.
Yeah.
I think breweries are getting away from them because apparently it's a pretty expensive process it's all hand done.
It's got to be a nightmare.
So
yeah.
Just in labor and the wax itself apparently is expensive.
Sure.
A buddy of mine was telling me that. So I don't think you'll see as many of them, but I think they're cool, you know? Yeah. And I can open a bottle of Maker's Mark too.
Yeah. I mean, if it started happening all the time, I'd be fired up about it. But it just doesn't happen enough for me to care.
Yeah, I don't think that's...
Yeah.
All right, last one. And we're running out of time here. It's IPAs with garbage added to them. I politely ask many of the aspiring brewers to stop adding shit to IPAs who don't know how to pimp it right. Let's get back to the basics, make a gangster one without all the extra bullshit. Besides that, let a mastery of balancing hops rightfully regain the spotlight of this style. You dig. And that comes from Ale Sharpton, writer for Cruising for a Bruising. All right. I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to name the brewery, but I got real fired up when I had all of a sudden, six different flavored IPAs from the same brewery this year. I'll just name them, Ballast Point. I was like, okay.
I thought you were going to say Green Flash. So there's more than one.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, okay, guys, we get it. You know, yeah. Are you going to, okay, what obscure fruit can you find from, from Thailand to put it in this summer? Enough. Yeah.
I think this goes with the same conversation we were having earlier.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
I like fruited IPAs sometimes.
Yeah.
Not all the time. It was a huge trend that I think is already waning.
I'm tasting now. I taste some grapefruit IPAs in particular that just taste like grapefruit juice. And you know, I'll be honest with you, I don't want to ruin my grape. you know, I want to keep my beer and my grapefruit juice separate, okay? I don't want, you know, like I don't want them.
You know, it's kind of a natural connection because a lot of these hop flavors are producing fruit flavors.
Right.
So, you know, of course it goes well with it. The hops already taste like grapefruit. Add some grapefruit juice in there and maybe you're, you know, accentuating that grapefruit flavor. But yes, it's definitely gotten out of hand, and you know, one from each brewery is definitely enough. And you know, we agree with Ale Sharpton. Something tells me that's a pseudonym. I don't think his name's really Ale Sharpton.
You never know these days.
You never know.
He should change it to that name if it is
legally changed his name to Ale Sharpton.
So real quick, do you want to go through, just as we kind of end, I was going to go through just a couple of things, and another thing we might do.
Yeah, let us know what's going on event-wise.
Yeah, so we're going to, a couple of events coming up to check out. Winter Brew here in Chicago, January 27, 28, up in Lincoln Square. Good German neighborhood. They always are doing some cool beer stuff. There's a big event at Navy Pier, the Chicago.
You just want to get them going in Marches.
There's a big event at Navy Pier, Chicago Ale Fest. They're doing a winter edition on January 28th. And then Cider Summit Chicago, which, you know, I'm not a huge cider fan, but I tell you what, they put on a nice event, and February 11th at Navy Pier. So a couple things coming up just to think about. Anything?
Sounds good.
Yeah, and then I'm running beer tours. We run a Saturday beer tour up in Lincoln Park, Lakeview, our bacon and brewing beer tour, so check us out. And then anything coming up at Kaiser? Or
We have our regular beer and bacon tastings at Kaiser every Saturday. You can sign up on our website. And, at Patty Long's. I said Kaiser Tiger.
Yeah.
Scratch that.
Like,
and then at Kaiser Tiger, we're deep into curling season. So come by and throw some stones and drink some beers. But I've got some events this weekend. I highly doubt this podcast will be out by then, so I'm not even going to mention them.
Cool.
That is about it from us.
All right.
Thanks again to all of our listeners. Please send us your feedback. And that's all I got.
Shout out to my dad. Thanks for listening.
Shout out to Bruce's dad. Later.